Hi, you're listening to the weekly podcast of Life Ministry Church. For more information, head to our website, www.lmc.org.au.
Hello.
Yeah, it is good when these people respond to that, isn't it? I'm so grateful that I've been given this opportunity to speak tonight, and I know just for me through the experience of just doing this bit, regardless of me even speaking it out, has really grown and challenged me in my walk with God. And I think how lovely it is that through the process and learning for me, I get so much out of it, but I hope as well that you guys would get something out of it tonight as well. So just starting off, I want you to think of something that you've wanted to change in your life, and you don't need to share it with anyone, but I want you to have a think about it. It might be something that's really important to you. It might be something that you've wanted to change for a while. So it might be like regular exercise. It might be a career change. It might be maintaining a healthy weight or spending more time with your family. Decluttering a room, and I think we've got some Christians here, so it might be spending more time reading the Bible or praying more often. So now, thinking about that, I knew I'd say this. Andy had said to me last time that I say a lot, and now every time I say it, I hear it in my head. Sorry. I want you to think about what might be good about making that change that you're thinking of. Keep your mind focused on what we were talking about. What it might look like to make that change. What would be the benefits of that change for you? Not the end result, but even just starting that change. So if I could all get you to stand, and I know Chris Blacker asked everyone to do it this morning, but I feel like he took it because I already had it written down on paper. If I can get you all to stand, I want you to sit down when I get to the length of time that you've been wanting to make the change. So you've got the thing in your head that you're thinking of that you've been wanting to change for yourself. Has everyone got something or not really? Surely there's something that you're wanting to change in your lives. Yes? A nod somewhere here or there? I'm going to go ahead anyway. So, have you been wanting to change this thing for the last week? If you've been wanting to change it for the last week, you can sit down. Have you been wanting to change this thing for the last month? Have you been wanting to change this thing for the last 6 months? Have you been wanting to change this thing for the last year? For the last 2 years? 5 years? Okay, so we've got sort of majority of everyone sitting down for about 5 years. I feel like I'll just get the rest of you guys to sit down there. That's okay. But what I'm really trying to prove, my point here is, we've all got something that we've been wanting to change for a really, really long time. And we've all said that it's something that's really, really important to us. So why haven't we changed it? What's stopping you from changing this thing which is so important, which you've also thought about the fact of the benefit of changing it? This thought process I found really challenging, and I find that I can apply it to all areas of my life, not just, you know, my Christian life, but all aspects. And there's things that I want to change that I know are important, but why haven't I changed them yet? And for me, that's faith. It's been a journey that I've been thinking about for a little while. And there's a scripture in Matthew 17:20. It says, I say to you, if you have faith as a mustard seed, you will say to the mountain, move from here to there, and it will move. Nothing is impossible for you. That says to me that even the tiniest amount of faith in God is transformational in my life. So I've decided that I want my faith to grow, to change from where it is now, but how is that going to happen? Can I just spend a little bit of time praying? God, I just pray that you help me understand your word and that I can share it clearly, Lord. that the truth of your word and the heart that you have for us would be heard tonight and be known by all of us. We love you so much, God, and we just pray that you would speak to us tonight. Amen. So when you say that you want to change something, you sort of think about, well, what is it that I want to change, and try and get a better understanding of it. And I know in the dictionary it says faith is having a complete trust and confidence in something or someone, that they will do what they say they will do, or it'll work how it says it'll work. But I find it really difficult to have complete trust in something, and even more difficulty to have complete trust in someone. I remember when Andy and I went on our honeymoon, we went bungee jumping together, and I had a lot of hope that that rope wouldn't break. A lot of hope, a lot of hope. It was a honeymoon. It was just starting new life together. But there's always a risk, isn't there? And the risk would have a potential really, really negative outcome. And we know that over history, somewhere, sometime, that rope has broken for someone. And that's why you sign a waiver form at the end, before you even do it, saying, I know I'm at risk of grievous bodily harm. But there's always a risk. And I think we can all think off the top of our head quite easily of a time where we've put trust in someone and that trust has been broken. So for me, I feel like the word faith can only truly be reserved for God. And faith is acceptance of the unknown. And it's saying, it's like that saying, to take a leap of faith. You don't know how much it's going to cost you, and you approach that gap with fear and trembling. A lot of fear and trembling. And then you choose to take the leap, or you don't. So for us, at some point along our spiritual journey, logic and reasoning are no longer adequate, and we must take a leap of faith in believing God. So we believe in God, but we struggle to understand or accept that God uses life's pains in his purpose. So if your reason for struggling to have faith and believe in God is mainly because of the difficulties that life can throw you, you're not alone. But let's have a look at it. Let's have a think about it. What does it actually mean to have faith in Jesus and God? What are you actually putting your confidence in? You can ask yourself the question, who do I actually say Jesus is? So historians of the time that were around when Jesus was around do not dispute that he was a real, living, breathing, walking person. Jesus was known for his miraculous works and his revolutionary teachings. People thought he was doing great things and was a really great teacher. The issue the Pharisees had with him was he wasn't just claiming to be a good person. He was claiming to be God. So who does Jesus actually say he was? And in John 10, 36 to 38, Jesus describes himself as the Son of God. And he further says, I and the Father are one. In a book written by Josh McDowell called Evidence That Demands a Verdict, it states it really simply, and I really like the way he puts it. It says, Jesus is one of three possibilities. He's either a liar, that he made it all up with the intention to deceive others, that he's a lunatic, that he was mentally unwell and deceived himself and others, or he is Lord. He is who he says he is. So who do you say Jesus is? C.S. Lewis says, a man who is merely a man and said the things that Jesus did could not be a great teacher if he wasn't telling the truth. Well, I haven't read it exactly. Either a lunatic or a devil, however strange or terrifying it is, I have to accept that he is God. Jesus gave his life under these claims that he made, that he was God. And further, he is the proof that God loves us so much because he didn't hold back his own son from being a sacrifice for us. So having faith in God means you believe that he is the creator, that he sent his perfect son to stand in the gap for us so that our sin would not separate us from spending eternity with him. Have a guess how many times faith is in the Bible. Throw it out to me. 10? 100? Any bidders? 200? 500? 2,000. A little bit high. 528 times throughout the Old and the New Testament, it's found in both the noun and verb form. So I think if it's in there that much, it's clearly something important. It's clearly a concept that we want to have a hold of and understanding of if we're saying that it's our faith. So I know that I can't do this topic justice in one brief little talk, but what I really want to do is help you achieve a moment of pause and reflection, and maybe create a desire for you to look a bit more deeply into it for yourself. Because one thing is for certain is that our faith will be challenged. In James 1, verses 2 to 4, it says, "My brethren, count it as joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." I also like the way that the Amplified Bible sort of extrapolates on it. And in verses 3 and 4, it says, "Be assured that the testing of your faith through experience produces endurance, leading to spiritual maturity and inner peace. And let endurance have its perfect result and so a thorough work, so that you may be perfect and completely developed in your faith, lacking nothing." So how does God know that I have faith in him? The story in Luke 5, 18 to 20 talked about how there was a big crowd around Jesus. He was in a house, and these guys wanted to get a paralyzed man on a stretcher to see Jesus to be healed. And to do it, they went in through the roof and lowered him down. And in verse 20, it says, "Jesus saw their faith and he said, 'Friend, your sins are forgiven.'" So how do you see someone's faith? You can't physically see it. It's not an aura or a supercharge that you click on and wham, bam, you've got it. Our faith is invisible until our actions demonstrate it. How we live, what we say, what we do with our finances, what we place value on, all speak to our faith. That is the confidence that he is in control. Our faith will become real or authenticated when we act on it, when we do something or say something because of what we believe. It is not enough just to claim you have a faith. Genuine faith will always produce good works. In James 2:14, it says, "What does it profit my brethren," I can't say that word, "brethren, if someone says that he has faith but does not have works? Can that faith save him?" Faith in Jesus produces obedience to Jesus. It's our desire to follow his example. Our obedient lives make God look glorious. Jesus said in Matthew 5:16, "Let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven." So what does having faith actually cause you to do? When I think of this question, I can't go past Abraham and his son Isaac. And I feel like his faith is crazy and next level. And it's one of those stories that I can't actually even imagine what I would do unless I was actually in the situation that he was in. But what I can see is Abraham's certainty and trust in God. But I'm not going to go to that one tonight. I wanted to use a different verse, and it's about the Shunammite woman in 2 Kings 4, verses 18 to 37. So, "Now it happened one day that Elisha went to Shunem, where there was a notable woman, and she persuaded him to eat food." I feel like I want to stop there, because what man needs to be persuaded to eat food? He truly must have been a holy man of God. "So it was, as often as he passed by, he would turn in there and eat some food." That sounds more like a man. "And she said to her husband, 'Look now, I know that this is a holy man of God who passes by us regularly. Please let us make a small upper room on the wall, and let us put a bed in there for him and a table and a chair and a lampstand. So it will be whenever he comes to us, he can turn in there.' So Elisha came by often." I think I'm just ad-libbing in this bit because it was such long read it. But I loved it all, but I'm just going to fill you in a little bit. So Elisha came by often and he saw the woman and he said to her, you know, for all the things that you've done, what can we do for you in return? And she said, there's nothing I need. And then the conversation in verse 14 is, so he said, what is then to be done for her? And Gehazi, which is his servant, answered, actually, she has no son and her husband's old. So he said, call her. And when he called her, she stood in the doorway. And then he said, about this time next year, you shall embrace a son. And she said, no, my Lord, my man of God, do not lie to your maidservant. But the woman conceived and bore a son when the appropriate time had come of that Elisha had told her of. So then the bit that I've missed as well is the child becomes unwell and he actually dies. And the Shunammite woman's response is she went and laid him up in the room of that she had for Elisha, and then she ran off to go and find Elisha. And then in verse 25 it says, so it was when the man of God saw her afar off that he said to his servant Gehazi, look, the Shunammite woman, please run to meet her and say to her, is it well with you? Is it well with your husband? Is it well with your child? And she answered, it is well. Now, when she came to the man of God at the hill, she caught him by the feet. But Gehazi came near to her and pushed her away. But the man of God said, let her alone. Her soul is in deep distress, and the Lord has hidden from me and not told me. She said, did I ask a son of my Lord? Did I not say, do not deceive me? So then Elisha tells Gehazi to run and not stop, don't talk to anyone, and place his staff on the face of the child. And then in verse 30 it says, And the mother of the child said, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, I will not leave you. So he arose and followed her. Now Gehazi went on ahead of them and laid the staff on the face of the child, but there was neither voice nor hearing. Therefore he went back to meet him and told him, saying, the child has not awakened. Elisha then went up to the room and shut the door behind him. And in verse 34, it says, and he went up and lay on the child and put his mouth on his mouth and his eyes on his eyes and his hands on his hands and stretched himself out on the child. And the flesh of the child became warm. He returned and walked back and forth in the house and again went up and stretched himself out on the child. Then the child sneezed seven times and the child opened his eyes. So he called to her, and when she came in to see him, he said, pick up your son. So she went in, fell at his feet, and bowed to the ground. Then she picked up her son and went out. It's pretty crazy, hey? And I really found when I read that one, I feel like since I've had a child, I cry more. But that one was just so real to me. I can't imagine what. Didn't think I'd cry tonight, but I can't imagine what I would do in that situation. Yeah, I really didn't think I'd cry. So, what can we see of the Shunammite woman's faith? Why am I still crying? That she honoured the holy man of God. And I think the Shunammite woman, it's a great example of how we should honour God in our relationship with him. She made space for him. She lavishly made space for him. She made a room on top of the house so he could come by there. It was a comfortable dwelling place for him so that he would come by often. She made room for him without expectation of receiving anything in return for what she'd done. Her faith caused her to highly value and prioritize his presence. Then the woman refused to leave God. So later down we hear that she refused to leave the man of God when, you know, he'd sent off his servant to go and do the work. She refused to leave him. His presence was so important for her to be in. And then we look at Gehazi, and he did what he was told. Exactly what he told. He did the actions, but it appeared to lack meaning to him. I did what you told me to do. There was no signs of life, so I came back to you. It's like one of those doctors that you feel like, well, I wouldn't want that doctor operating on me. He doesn't care about me. And then we see Elisha, and he does something really bizarre. And I was thinking, I don't even think I could come up with the ideas that he did of what he did. But what he was doing was a symbol of the faith that he had in God. And there's no formula to this bit. It's an outward act of an inward commitment. It may look utterly crazy, but not to God. Elisha is referred to as a man of God, and we can assume that he's been given this title because of his miraculous works. Yet when they asked the Shunammite woman what she would want, she didn't ask for anything from him. And I was thinking, if I had that opportunity for someone who had done miraculous works, I'd probably be asking for something. But you see, in her response to when she was asked, when she was said, you will have a son this time next year, she said, "No, my Lord, man of God, do not deceive your maidservant." I feel like they touched a sore point for her, something that made her feel really vulnerable. Sometimes the desires or needs we have are in an area that we are really vulnerable in, especially if others know about it. And sometimes that's what God chooses to grow us in our faith. It seems that her faith was being stretched and challenged. And when I think of it during that time, it would have been so disappointing to not be able to have a child. It meant so much for the family line. And not having a child, I think even back then, was viewed as a curse. So it was a pivotal moment for her in her faith walk, I think. It was like a memory peg moment where she could claim that that was her God. It became real and personal for her. And then comes the what the heck moment. And this son that you have promised me, the one that I didn't ask for, might I add, you're taking away from me. Just like Abraham and Sarah, the child that God had given them is now being taken away. What do you do in those moments when it's not going at all like you thought it should? In this specific story, the Shunammite woman, she's holding fast to the promise that she was given, and she chases after that. And the result was an outcome that she'd obviously hoped for. Her son lived and it was miraculous. But what about when what we hope for or what we think should happen doesn't play out in God's plans? Reading the book of Habakkuk, it challenged me. One, the name, not the length, it's only 3 or 4 pages, but how God works. In Habakkuk, the prophet, Habakkuk. We'll get there. The prophet is asking God how long he's going to let these bad things happen before he does something about it. And God answers him, but not at all in the way that he'd hoped for. God said he was going to use his enemies, the Chaldeans, to wake up God's people and to get them to turn away from their own way of doing things and to turn back to him. God used their enemies to help them come back to him. I believe that the principle is the same whether we're rebelling against God or whether we're in the darkest moments of life. He's a sovereign God. I don't believe God ever said that it was going to be easy. You just need to think of his own son and what he had to go through. So it's important to think about what you're putting your faith, trust, and confidence in. Is it that God will give you that child or that he would take that pain away from you? Are you putting your faith in a desired outcome? Or are you putting it in God? Trusting that he is who he says he is. Trusting in the fact that God is sovereign. Trusting in the fact that what he says will come to pass. The only way we get disappointed when God moves is when we have a strong expectation for a certain outcome that doesn't get met. So it's better that we put our faith in the fact that God is in control and that all things work together for his good and that his ways are so much higher than ours. So what are we doing to increase our faith? Our faith, when we have faith, one of two things happens. We grow it internally by the things that we do, or it can be grown or shrunk by the external circumstances in life. Either way, external or internal, it's growing or shrinking. And I sort of see our faith as sitting along a continuum in how it changes over time, looking at three different ways. One is incrementally. You grow it bit by bit. You read the Bible a bit more each day. You feel challenged about it. You do it a little bit here and there. And I think the Shunammite woman was exampling that to us at the start when she was making space for God. You grow it transformationally. It changes transformationally. When you alter a way of thinking or feeling or doing, this is the moment for when the Shunammite woman, when her outlook and belief in God changed drastically when she realised that he was capable of doing something that she didn't think he could and she had a son. Or catastrophically, when life circumstances dramatically change, requiring you to relook what you once believed as fundamental in your life. And I think this occurred for the Shunammite woman when her son died. Sometimes our faith can take a hit. The calamity of life can throw you off. You might find yourself asking, would God really do this to me if he loved me? And that's when I think I really want you to remember Jesus. Remembering what God has done for us personally and collectively as his children. We've got our memory pegs. Each of us have got our own memory pegs that we can stand strong on and remind us that he can do it again. When we act on our faith, it will demonstrate one of two things: that our faith is in God, or that our faith is in ourselves. So doing this for me, preparing for this, has been overwhelming at times. And I've felt a little bit out of my depth. To write one message has actually taken me a couple of months. But the time that I've had with God, the growth that I've had, this has been my little leap of faith. Because I said to God I wouldn't say no to him if he'd asked me to do something. And I felt like he'd called me to do this. It's been exciting. It's been solidifying for my faith. It hasn't come naturally, but I'm glad because I feel like it's made the experience so much richer. And I hope that what I've done out of obedience and faith helps grow yours. So what do I feel like the take-home messages are? Think about how you grow your faith. What does it look like for you? Don't stay stagnant, keep moving. Remember Jesus often. Spend time with God. Walk outside and see his beautiful creation. Make the effort. Do those actions. Act it out. And I think that this is part of the Living This Is Living series. It's a life with full confidence in him. So I think that's about it for me. That was all I had to say. Thank you for hearing. I think I was meant to close in prayer.